Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell. It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
All righty, we'll try it here. The Week 16 matchup podcast here at FantasyGuru.com should be coming at you now here. A little technical glitch there. Not sure what the heck's going on with our Blog Talk radio feed. First, we were hi-fi sound all year, and that was wonderful. That went away. Now we can't even really do it unless we're on the phone line, but I think we do have Greg Cosell. What's up, Greg?
John, what's happening, my friend? Happy holidays to you.
I'm already beginning my search for a new podcast site for 2016, Greg. That's my vow to you, sir. We've had a lot of problems. We've tried to be patient. Maybe we're not the most wonderful customers of theirs, but say goodbye, Blog Talk. Anyway, let's move on here, Greg, and we're going to do this a little earlier. So, you know, full disclosure, I personally don't have my head wrapped around all the injuries for the week, and I know it's a little earlier than usual, but we do have unusual circumstances, obviously, with the holiday, Greg. So we'll do the best we can here, and as I said at the top, I'm not sure if it's going to make it onto the recording, but I put out a column every Sunday morning that I spent about 5-6 hours on it in terms of getting a full picture of the injuries, the expected playing statuses and all that. So check that out if you're still playing for your championship. We certainly wish you the best of luck, Greg. We'll start with the Thursday night game, of course, the Chargers and the Raiders. You know, the one thing that kind of struck me watching the Raiders, and I don't think you saw the tape yet. But
I did not.
You know, the one thing that did strike me about it is they are still very, very committed to Latavius Murray. I mean,
they are.
Say what you want about him. You know, he's getting 20 carries a game, Greg. They're committed to balance on offense in Oakland.
Without question. And I think it's the right move. I mean, we've talked about Murray and we've talked about the O-line, and I think both those need upgrades. But I think it's the right thing to do, particularly with a quarterback who's still relatively young. And I think that anytime you stay with balance, for the most part, it helps your offense. It helps you create things you want to create in the pass game. And in some ways, it's like the Cardinals. The Cardinals don't run in order to throw. They run to stay balanced, and it helps their offense. It helps their pass game.
I think that the Chargers have been bad against the run all year. They're improving a little bit. I'm not sure the last time you saw the tape. I think they're
I've seen the Chargers recently.
Are they using Denzel Perryman a lot more inside because he's a little bit bigger, I believe, than Donald Butler?
Well, actually, Perryman is short. He probably weighs about 240. He's short. But it's funny because every time I've watched the Chargers D over the last month, 6 weeks, he flashes. Perryman, is a very good inside linebacker with great feel and awareness to work through traffic. And he's effective in the run game.
Yes, that's what I mean. I think he's playing more over Butler. That has helped a little bit. Big picture, they have been beatable against the run, so we kind of established this is a factor, and he'll likely get 20 carries unless it's kind of a blowout. Any thoughts on the matchup for Cooper? Nice bounce-back game for him. Michael Crabtree as well. It's really about those two guys. Seth Roberts, unusually quiet last week. He had only one target. But I think that Weddle tends to line up on one side, Cooper's side, more often than not. So we could see, you know, Crabtree with perhaps a good matchup. Honestly, I don't know a lot about their other starting corner right now, Greg. It's Steve Williams.
Yeah, Steve Williams came out of California a few years ago. He's obviously not their original starter. It was Flowers. But, yeah, they're secondary. They're down bodies.
So there you go. So not a bad matchup whatsoever. And also pass rush-wise for the Chargers,
they've
not
struggled.
All that great, right? Yeah,
they've struggled. So, It's basically Ingram and Atachu on the outside, and while they both have had their moments, they have not been able to generate a consistent pass rush throughout this season.
And I know you haven't seen the Raider D this past week, but...
Not this past week, no.
You look at the numbers here, Greg, and I'll throw out a couple for you. You know, everyone, just the perception is, oh, it's the Raiders, start them. Well, you know, quarterbacks are doing okay here in this matchup overall, but, you know, they're improved defensively. I mean, what are you seeing from the defense here that has led to these improvements? I mean, is it all Khalil Mack balling? But it seems like it's a cohesive team effort here. They're good against – I mean, they're solid right now in all areas, actually.
Well, they made a number of changes, maybe a month or so ago with different players. Ben Heaney plays now at linebacker for them, and I think that their talent level is, I think, better than people think. They lost Mario Edwards, who I believe went on IR today, lost for the season. He was really coming on as kind of a multi-dimensional defensive lineman. But this is a pretty solid group, and you know, I think – Look, I think Jack Del Rio does a nice job in terms of consistency. You know, I think a lot of people believe that he doesn't maybe blitz enough, he doesn't pressure enough, but I think he tries to play a solid sort of staple kind of defense, and I think they've improved. Early in the season, they were poor, as you know, and they've clearly gotten better.
Yeah, and they're also, you know, I'm trying to pull up these numbers here on my file, but they are actually – pretty darn good against quarterbacks and running backs. So here's the numbers here lately against the quarterbacks. And, you know, I guess it's worth noting Phil Rivers had a good game last week. 60% completion percentage last 4 weeks, which is below average. Only 6 yards an attempt. It's fewer than 20 fantasy points, which means they're doing a hell of a job. Against the run, Greg, and, of course, the Chargers lost Melvin Gordon, so we'll see some Donald Brown. But against the run, they're only giving up 3 yards a carry. So, to me, it's really against the run. They've been kind of stymieing teams. So, you know, Danny Woodhead is going to get the ball, there's no doubt. Donald Brown looked decent. You could use him if you need him. But this Raider D, it's no joke. And I don't think we're going to see Stevie Johnson, although the Raiders probably are vulnerable to the tight end. Moving on here, Washington, Philly. Here we go, Greg, and this is kind of for all the marbles here in terms of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I guess we should first take a look here at the status of Byron Maxwell. Well, Eric Rowe practiced in full. Okay. Byron Maxwell, though, did not practice, Greg.
Right.
So we could be looking at the Eagles without Byron Maxwell. Now, of course, Deshaun didn't practice today here on Wednesday, but let's assume he goes. And we talked about it last week, Greg. It kind of came to fruition. I didn't like Larry Fitzgerald. We talked about Malcolm Jenkins and their ability to cover inside. I thought it would be an outside receiver game. Geez, they tried getting the ball to Donald Brown. He dropped a lot of passes. But this really seems like a problematic matchup for the Eagle D, considering their injuries, how they're playing, and how Kirk Cousins is playing.
Well, even with Maxwell and Rowe, and we don't know, Rowe will go, but they're a slow secondary, so they struggle with speed. And you know, this is where it's funny. Obviously, John Brown did not provide a ton of fantasy points last week, but John Brown should have been probably the big fantasy receiver of the week, and he wasn't,
yep,
simply because he dropped three balls. But the Redskins are very talented with their weapons. As you well know, Jordan Reed has been targeted 16 times the last 2 weeks. He's caught 16 balls. And now that they have Deshaun back, and he's a major factor, they have every dimension you could ask for on offense. Now, their run game is the only thing that is holding them back to some degree. Cousins has been very consistent over the last 2 months. He's only thrown 3 picks in the last 8 games. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game, John. I think that the Eagles are going to score as well. And, you know, to me, this has the feel of a 33-27 kind of game.
Yeah, I can see that. Do you have any thoughts whatsoever on some of these numbers with Jordan Reed? Because, you know, we've been ranking him high the last couple of weeks, really high, and he's come through, I think, a tight end 2 weeks ago, and he destroyed the Bears. But in his last 4 games against the Eagles, he actually hasn't scored. has put up only 3 grabs for 23, only 7 yards a catch. So, and then the Eagle D, I mean, it could be a function of who they play, but they haven't given up all that much. Do you give any credence to Jordan Reed's shaky history, just going back this year and last year, and the Eagles by the numbers against the tight end?
Well, I can't remember all the circumstances as to who, what the situation was with the quarterback for Washington, who was missing. But right now, I think their offense is working with all the dimensions. So none of us can sit here and say he's going to catch 9 balls for 130 yards, but I don't believe he's going to get 3 targets or catch 2 balls. He's a major part of their offense. I think the Eagles will struggle defending him. They're multi-formational, the Redskins, and I'm curious who's going to cover Jordan Reed when he lines up, let's say split, who's going to cover him? And if they stay with a corner outside and don't match up, then you're going to have DeSean Jackson on the inside. So the Redskins present problems for an Eagles secondary that's, like I said, one of the slower units in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I would think Malcolm Jenkins can help out against Jordan Reed, but not all the time. Now, you think it's going to be a shootout. Give us your thoughts as to why. We know the Redskins D is not a shutdown group. Pass rush coming on a little bit. Bradford did put up numbers last week. Give us the reasoning why you think Philly can have some success and make this a higher scoring game.
Well, I think that Bradford, for the most part, played well over the last month. I think the Eagle offense, they've moved the ball. Their problem has been scoring touchdowns because I don't believe they scored more than 2 offensive touchdowns in a game since New Orleans, and New Orleans was quite a while ago. But they've been moving the ball pretty effectively. I think the Redskins don't provide a consistent pass rush. I think that their secondary has been stabilized to some degree. I think, you know, D'Angelo Hall is now a full-time safety, and I think that's a place where he'll eventually prosper. But I don't think this is a shutdown kind of defense, and I think the Eagles will move the ball. So I look – now, again, it's always turnovers, but I think that the Eagles will go up and down the field, and then they've got to score. You know, that's the big issue. But they're going to put up yards. They put up yards against Arizona for the most part.
Yeah, and look, Sam Bradford did have – probably his best fantasy day, stat day, against Washington back in week 4 in Washington, 270 and 3 touchdowns. Jeez, I just wish that we could pinpoint some matchups here for the Eagles and say, oh, it's going to be a Zach Ertz game. But although, Greg, full disclosure, we did do that at fantasyguru.com this week. We loved Ertz, came through. But, you know, there's no real reason we could say, oh, Jordan Matthews looking good this week in this matchup, or Zach Ertz. I mean, that's been the case all year. Why would it be different in week 16?
Well, he likes throwing to Ertz. In fact, he's probably thrown to Ertz a few too many times when he shouldn't have thrown to Ertz based on the coverage. But, you know, Ertz is a guy that he likes throwing to.
That is true. And I think that's probably the best point that we've made all year, because we're giving Ertz some love. And we know that they don't specifically design plays. Why is it? Well, it's the quarterback ultimately is throwing the ball. And if he's comfortable throwing it to Ertz, he's going to be inclined to look for him. So I think that's kind of what's been going on here the last 2 months. All right, so we got that going on here. We've got the running back situation. I know you probably studied the tape. Did Ryan Matthews look any better real quick last week?
I thought Ryan Matthews pretty good. You know, he's a good back. I mean, obviously he had the really bad fumble, and that was killer. But he's their best. I mean, leaving Sproles out for a moment, you know, who's a different kind of player. But look, they've told you how they feel. What did Murray play? 8 snaps, something like that.
Yep.
You know,
Murray's not
really a factor right now, so it's going to be Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles.
What kills me with Matthews? He's kind of a good example of what makes this job so difficult, especially this year and especially this week. The running back position is a disaster this week, but. Ryan Matthews, I could absolutely envision a scenario in which the Eagles do well, move the ball, have a lead, and then lean on him a little bit in the end. I could absolutely see him running for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns, but he could also have 11 carries for 39 yards. It's unbelievable.
And you're right about that. I mean, the Eagles offense, It's been one of the most difficult offenses, I'm sure, for fantasy, because there's been this sense, and then I know we'll move on here. We can spend an hour talking about the Eagles. You know, there's always been this sense that this is a high-powered offense that's going to put up numbers. They really haven't. In fact, they rank near the – I mean, I know it probably helped this past week, particularly with Bradford's passing, but they've ranked near the bottom of the league in a lot of categories. The offense has been somewhat anemic, which no one would have expected leading into this season with the Chip Kelly offense.
Let's move on to the next matchup here. It is the Jaguars and the Saints. We're going to skip around here a little bit in terms of the time, but we just don't know about Drew Brees. So
no.
Can you think back to when Luke McCown played earlier?
I remember how he played. He played against Carolina, and he played very well He was very, very solid in that game.
He's got a good arm. You know, he can sling that football. Just didn't put enough air on that ball that Josh Norman intercepted. So it's a tough call here talking about the Saints here on Wednesday night. Drew Brees, Greg, is in quite a bit of pain here with the foot and claims he's going to play. So we'll see about that one. And we know what the Jaguar D is kind of all about. A little improved. I see a little bit improved in terms of putting the pressure on the quarterback, but they're still a little bit vulnerable there on the back end. What I really wanted to ask was if you had any thoughts on Delvin Bro, because I thought for sure he'd be on Calvin a lot on Monday night, and he actually wasn't. They put Brandon Browner on him, who's obviously
the
got the size.
I mentioned that to you last week, that I thought that they'd put Browner on him because of the size issue, because Johnson is not, you know, he's not a dynamic, explosive mover. And I know that I talked about that with you, that I thought it would be Browner. And, you know, there's certain corners, because of size, the Patriots do that as well with Malcolm Butler. There are certain receivers he won't play man-to-man against because the size issue. So that didn't surprise me at all with Delvin Bro.
Believe me, I kept it in the back of my mind, and I figured Calvin is going to see a matchup against a sizable corner no matter what, and he's been a little sluggish, and well, he ended up not doing well. We actually ranked Golden Tate over him, and that came through. So Delvin Bro, does he typically – he doesn't travel then. Have you noticed
this
year?
He does. He's traveled a lot this year. It's just that particular matchup, John. That was not a matchup for him. You know, it's just one of those. Yeah, he'll travel. He's traveled this year quite a bit.
Yeah, you know what? I did know that, but you know how it is, Greg. You know, I can't remember who played who last week almost. I mean, it's, you know, they run into each other. So you would think they'd have Delvin Bro here on traveling with Allen Robinson. What do you think of that matchup? That will be a good one.
He could, or they could also view Robinson as too big for him. I'm not convinced of that, because as much as I like Robinson, he's not a quick twitch. You know, he's not Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham. So I don't know if that's a given that Delvin Bro is on Allen Robinson.
But if he is, he's not a quick twitch guy. That's a tougher matchup.
No, but Robinson has been as good a receiver in the league this year at making contested catches, you know, 50-50 catches.
Right.
He's been really good at that.
Yeah. And Blake Bortles, they throw it, and the Saints are very vulnerable. You know, this could be a Julius Thomas game as well, Greg, because you know this Saint defense, granted a little improved under Dennis Allen, but, you know, Julius Thomas has been a huge factor here for the Jags, and that looks like a good matchup here on paper.
Yeah, the Jaguars have weapons as well. They're, you know, and Bortles, for the most part, you know, they lead the league in 20-plus. Bortles does, I believe, 20-plus completions for a quarterback. They get the ball down the field, and they pretty much do so every game. And Thomas has now become clearly a factor over the last, what, I guess 6-7 weeks, John. He's clearly become a factor, seemingly catching 6 or 7 balls every week. So, no, this is a pretty consistent pass offense from a fantasy standpoint.
Who do we see Brandon Browner? I mean, he could potentially cover Julius Thomas. We've seen that, right?
Yes, we've seen that, and that could be the case. Would not surprise me. Earlier in the year, Browner played the tight end. When Rob Ryan was there, Browner played the tight end when they went to their sub packages. Since Dennis Allen took over, that hasn't been the case, but this could be an exception. You know, we'll see. Obviously, he played Johnson and he did not play Eric Ebron, but this could be a game where they could put Browner on Thomas in certain situations.
And what we do here, just so the listeners know, is, you know, we've got Greg, so he's a wealth of information, but he's not dialed into every single darn team here, 32 teams. So over the course of the week, I have these type of questions, and I'll try and get the answers to them, whether it be talking to beat writers or even just reading what has been said by the beat writers, because they're usually right about this, these type of matchups. So that's what I do, just so listeners know. I'll adjust based on the information I get over the weekend, and I'll pass it along to everybody on Sunday. Indy at Miami. Well, Greg, it looks
that's
at the very least.
That's the game of the week, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. At the very least, it looks like the Dolphins are going to get Rishard Matthews back. And you could kind of argue that he's kind of been like the glue that's kind of held things together. At least he was earlier in the year. I don't know what we can say about him in terms of helping out Ryan Tannehill, but how about the team being inclined to go with Jay Ajayi? And this is a real problem for fantasy people because they seem to be in evaluation mode right now for Ajayi. You know, Lamar Miller
well,
is.
Well, I mean, yes and no. He had 6 carries last week. I don't know if this week that means, you know, 15 carries. We don't know that. I mean, of course, they fell behind 2 last week, and the run game sort of fell by the wayside. So it's tough to say. I mean, I know he scored a touchdown. That's great, but he had 6 carries. So
it was about even, though.
And maybe if the game's closer, he will get the ball more simply because, you know, the score will dictate that.
Yeah, and then Devontae Parker, you know, it's kind of Mr. Every Other Week here. I mean, he's a work in progress, but he seems to – I think the kid's got a chance, Greg. I know the tape – you know, it's funny because you said the tape was mixed. Some weeks he looks dominant. Some weeks it looks like he wants to, you know, crawl up in the fetal position. I'm kind of seeing that already in the NFL, but – you know, on the positive end of it, I mean, the kid does have enough talent to be a pretty serious difference maker down the road.
Well, he's got talent. You know, the question for me, there were a lot of questions, but I think there's a toughness question, there's a competitiveness question, and, you know, he's a long, smooth athlete. That's what he is. But, you know, there's a lot of those guys who don't necessarily make it because you need to be, you know, tough, and I'm not. I have to see that.
Yeah. You know, just for the Miami Dolphins, Brandon Albert and Mike Pouncey didn't practice, so that's not good. Well, they may actually get Juwan James back, Greg. Juwan James, the number one pick from 2014, has been out for months.
Right.
So there you go. And checking in on the Colts here injury-wise, you know, it's not going to be Andrew Luck, that's for sure. Hasselbeck is expected to play. Greg, T.Y. Hilton's talking about, you know, wanting to get the ball down the field a little bit more. We know this Miami Dolphins secondary struggled. You know, can we have any confidence that Hasselbeck can get Hilton the ball here with a good matchup after he's kind of pining for the ball?
Well, he might get him the ball, but he's not going to hit him for, you know, deep down the field. That's Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
That's not Matt Hasselbeck. So you have to play to your quarterback if you're going to throw the ball. And Hasselbeck is a quick game quarterback. It's quick timing, quick rhythm. That's going to be the pass game.
I think I've asked you this before, and it's probably something that's a little annoying. But Frank Gore, I mean, how much of the problems here would you put on just not having Andrew Luck? I mean, let's be honest about it.
Well,
you have Andrew Luck.
To me, John, Gore is a volume runner. He's a rhythm runner. And in San Francisco for all those years, he got the ball. You know, he got carries. There was a flow and a stability to the run game, clearly in San Francisco. There has not been in Indianapolis. And he is not a sort of snapshot player. You know, he's not a flash player. You know, for many reasons, and I don't know how many games this year he's gotten the ball more than 18 or 20 times. It's you can count those on one hand, I'm sure. But that's the kind of back he is.
Yeah, it's come down here because, look, I mean, I was talking a little bit more about, you know, safeties having to play back a little bit and all that and the threat of him as a runner and all that. But the bottom line is he's a better quarterback. You're driving, your drives are longer. You're running off more plays. You're converting a few extra third downs and staying on the field. And all those factors have kind of hurt Frank Gore this year. Although, for the record, I mean, it is a decent matchup. Greg, let's talk New England at the Jets, and we know that this matchup has been somewhat problematic for Tom Brady. But let me ask you this, because, you know, Danny Amendola, as we record this, is iffy, and I knew that he was still favoring the knee going into last week, then probably had some sort of setback. You know, it doesn't look like it's ultra serious, but I'm not sure he plays. So let's assume he's out and Edelman's out. Now you've got Gronk, LaFell, who I would imagine we'll see a lot of Revis. I mean, is this a problematic matchup for Tom Brady in this passing game?
Well, look, last week he favored the backs throwing the ball. I think the backs had a good number of targets last week. You know, the last time they played was a terrific game, Week 7, where the Jets played 16 snaps of zero coverage, which is unheard of in the NFL. Who knows, they might do it again, although they got burned on it on that Gronk touchdown near the end where they invited the zero and had a great answer for it. But, I think if they're without Edelman and Amendola, obviously the weapons are limited. And I think even this week when I watched the Patriots against Tennessee, and this has been true for the last 3-4 weeks, you know, I think the O-line has leaked a little bit. I think Brady's been under a little more pressure. I think the pass game has not been quite as strong. I mean, it's certainly not been problematic. Look, this week, in a key point in the fourth quarter, the Titans went cover zero, and they actually got great pressure on Brady, and he made an unbelievable throw to LaFell for, you know, I don't know how many yards, but it wrapped up the game. So, but they've had a little chink in the armor over the last month or so with their pass game.
No doubt. So if we can assume that Amendola's out, no Edelman, we can also assume, again, we know what happens when we assume, Greg, but we'll do it anyway, that Revis is locked up there on LaFell. Greg, to me, it's Mr. James White. I love this kid, and I think he's going to be an active player here. I mean, who else are they looking to?
Maybe it's Martin? A Steven Jackson game, John.
Oh, I wanted to get your analysis and just break it all down with Steven Jackson, but we'll save that for another. We'll do the Steven Jackson podcast later in the week. But, you know, I would imagine, Greg, he could step right in, you know, short yardage. They don't seem to like Brandon Bolden as a tough, rugged interior runner. I mean, that's
right.
My takeaway from the Yosefa pickup and the Steven Jackson signing.
Yeah, Yosefa kid. You see him run over Cody Sensabaugh?
Well, he's a former fullback, Greg. He's huge, right?
I think he's a former linebacker, actually.
Could have sworn the kid played fullback, too. Well, he might have been both.
Oh,
right?
I'm sure he did. Yeah.
Right. How about for the Jets? I saw in your notes Chan Gailey doing a real good job scheming and designing guys open. And maybe that's the explanation.
I'll give you a perfect example where you talk about, you know, just this side of the ball and matchups, okay? Malcolm Butler has played a good part of the season the opponent's number one receiver, right? And that's what he's done.
Right.
That's what they've asked him to do. When they played the Jets Week 7, he didn't play Brandon Marshall. Logan Ryan did, and they doubled Brandon Marshall, and he played Eric, and Butler matched up to Eric Decker. So, you know, it all depends on matchups. There's a few number one corners who are, you know, the Revises, the Petersons, who will always match up no matter who the opposing number one is. But then there's other number ones who won't.
Challenging matchup no matter how you slice it because, you know, I think I'm not studying the tape, but Logan Ryan looks like a damn good player to me.
He's had a good year. He's had a very solid year.
I mean, you look at losing Revis and Browner. I think Butler and Ryan are significantly better than those two as a group.
They're probably better than Browner for sure, but, not necessarily Revis. But last week McCourty didn't play either. I don't. Would you know what his status is?
Yeah, he was inactive. I don't have an update on McCourty. Also, Chung, you know, did get injured
He did get
week,
injured,
so.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, he was on the ground there for a minute. So,
well,
you know, again,
it's your head can explode. By the way, when I watch tape of the Patriots D trying to keep track of all the personnel, I mean, this past week they played Nate Ebner about 20 snaps. They had signed Leonard Johnson, the former Bucks nickel corner. He played about 20 snaps in the slot. So, it's really difficult to keep track of who they play. They mix and match people, and it's all week dependent. So it's game dependent.
Who's been their best player? To me, I'd say I probably lean to Malcolm Butler, but you may say Hightower or someone
else.
Oh,
you mean overall on their defense?
On defense, yeah.
I think Chandler Jones has played very well. You know, Hightower, he's missed a couple of games, but he was back. He's played real well. You know, when Collins is in there, he's always, you know, an explosive athlete. Butler's been very good. Butler's been far better than I thought he'd be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of very quietly, they kind of have like a star, almost like a star-studded D right now.
Well, they are tied with the Broncos for the most sacks in the NFL.
Yep, there it is. So, challenging matchup. And the Jets, you know, they're. I did some TV with Willie Colon on Sunday, but he was effusive. He was effusive in his praise of Bilal Powell, of all people. But he's really performing very, very well. And he's kind of like what a Spiller would have been, really, for Chan Gailey, you know, alongside Chris Ivory. He's very versatile. I don't know if you've noticed him at all the last couple of weeks.
Oh, of course. He's not explosive, but they use him. He's in the screen game. They use him in the passing game quite a bit, and every once in a while in the run game at a shotgun, obviously had a touchdown like that. So he's a critical piece of their offense. He's probably a hard fantasy guy because those guys don't necessarily get the same numbers on a week-to-week basis, but he's an important piece of their offense.
Yeah, I've always liked him. I pumped him up a couple of years ago as like a real deep guy, deep sleeper, and it was good for about 7 weeks, and then it just dried up. But he's actually been better for fantasy lately than Bilal Powell. He's actually been like a top 20 guy for fantasy. So I think that's going to continue. They're going to continue to get him the ball here. So, you know, bottom line, lower expectations for Marshall and Decker today because look at what they did last week, as you just said, the last time out. You know, they put their best corner on Decker, they doubled Marshall, and they did a good job.
Well, Decker had 6 for 94 in that game. Marshall, I believe, only had 4 catches.
Right. As a tandem, that was one of their least productive games of the season.
That is correct. Yep.
Houston at Tennessee, and I'm sure you're not studying these teams, although I know you saw the Texans because they played.
Oh, yeah. I see Tennessee every week because I do radio
right,
in Nashville. So gotcha. I see Tennessee every week.
How did Mettenberger look? We know he can sling it. Maybe makes Doriel Green Beckham somewhat intriguing with that big arm of his. How did Mettenberger look?
I thought he played better in this game than he did in his two starts. Made some very good throws. He threw a couple of picks. One I thought was just an underthrown ball. I didn't think it was a poor read. But you're right. He threw it a couple of times to Doriel Green Beckham when Green Beckham was technically covered, and he made very good throws and was able to get him the ball. So, you know, I think versus man coverage, he will throw the ball to Doriel Green Beckham. Mettenberger is a pull the trigger quarterback. He turns it loose.
Yeah, and you know, when you're a big, strong pocket quarterback like that, and you got that big body there along with Delanie Walker, it's probably really inviting to just squeeze it into DGB. Do you notice him improving? Do you notice him improving at all?
You know, he's a very big body, John, and if you throw him the ball, I mean, he certainly can catch it.
Right.
And he can make contested catches. You know, the 29-yarder in the second quarter and the 30-yarder in the third quarter were the kinds of contested catches you expect him to make given his size and his catching radius. That's what he is. I mean, he's not a quick athlete.
Is he a little bit of a body catcher? Do you notice him being a hands catcher?
One of his catches this week he caught kind of with his hands, but I think he's more of a body catcher at this point than a hands catcher.
Exactly. That's why I ask, because
yeah.
I kind of noticed
yeah.
that. And we got maybe Brandon Whedon, maybe Brian Hoyer, but the bottom line is, the only person that people are going to seriously consider is of course DeAndre Hopkins, and you know even if it's you out there quarterbacking, it's kind of hard to pass up on DeAndre Hopkins against this Titan secondary. I mean they're still kind of struggling, and certainly didn't get lit up by Brady, but it's a good matchup for the passing attack.
Yeah, although I think their front seven's pretty good, and they actually played pretty well against New England this week.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know. We did notice a couple weeks ago how poorly they were playing. Alfred Blue did get 20 carries last week. It's kind of an ugly committee there. So we'll move on to Cleveland at KC, and it's another tough matchup for Johnny. Maybe compare and contrast the matchup and the challenge for Manziel and the Browns last week in Seattle versus this week in Kansas City?
Well, again, they're playing a quick, fast defense that's good in the secondary, very good in the secondary. This will be another tough matchup. Manziel has his moments. He's still primarily a late in the down off schedule player. If the pass game concepts don't present a clean read and throw, he's kind of a random player, and he'll always make those kinds of plays. One thing Manziel has is outstanding vision on the move. He sees people. He's now started consecutive games. He's probably done enough to warrant further looks, but the limitations are apparent on film. The entire offense was overmatched versus Seattle. My guess is they'll probably be overmatched against Kansas City.
Yeah, and Kansas City's been really good against the tight end this year, and Gary Barnes will likely get his, but how about your guy Marcus Peters making the Pro Bowl, Greg?
Well, you know how I felt about him right from the start. I thought he was arguably the best corner in this draft. He's been starting from day one. He's had a really good season.
And by the way, Tom Bahaly did have that surgery on his thumb. Didn't practice today, Wednesday. Justin Houston is unlikely to play, so I guess there's a slight chance that Holly doesn't play, but I would imagine, since he's not ruled out, he'll have a chance to play. I thought it was a good sign, for what it's worth, that Johnny did get five balls completed to Duke Johnson on five targets, for what it's worth. I don't know if you noticed it, but I thought Duke looked very fast last week. Did you pick up on that?
I agree with
all?
You. Oh, yeah, I made a note. That he showed burst and acceleration, and that he has a chance to be an excellent combination runner receiver who can be effective in those spread 11 personnel spread formations. That's what I think he can be.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't stealing that from your notes. That was just my own personal. There was a couple of others. Oh my God! Look at that. He looked fast. So
yeah, he looked good.
We'll keep that in the back of our mind for next year for Kansas City. What can we say about this Brown D? I mean, they're just, the Kansas City offense is not exactly easy, but they're getting the ball to Macklin every week. Hayden's long gone. I don't know the last time you saw. Did you watch? You didn't watch Seattle's offense, did you?
Not yet. I will, but I didn't get to that yet.
I mean, guys are just seemingly like just getting wide open against Cleveland. I mean, it seems like they're always like there's always someone wide open.
Well, they've had a bad year defensively. We know what Kansas City is offensively. I think that they're not going to toss it all over the yard. They play their game pretty much every week. They play the same way. They don't turn it over. They run just enough. And every once in a while, Smith, hits a big play, whether he does it through audibling like he did 2 weeks ago against the Chargers when he hit Alfred Wilson for a touchdown, when he audibled and saw the zero blitz, or whether they take a shot here and there. But that's the way they play.
Moving on, Greg, to San Fran at Detroit. And this Niner defense has been a pain in the butt, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, very hard.
I mean, the Jekyll and Hyde, right? I mean, I do think there's something to the home versus away deal, though. I got to be honest, Greg. They seem to be playing better, a little bit better at home. For example, quarterbacks in the fantasy world playing against them at home are putting up like 22, 23 points. In San Fran, it's like 19, so which is a fairly significant margin. But based on this Lion offense right now, they actually got the running game going last week. I would think that Detroit will have success here with Calvin, Tate, you get Lance Moore back. Ebron made a play. I would think that Detroit is it's got a little bit too much firepower for these Niners to stop.
Yeah, and they're playing at home on their faster surface. The 49ers made a change at corner last week. I don't know if that will continue this week. They sat down Kenneth Acker after about 10 plays and played Dante Johnson at corner. He's a longer kid. He's about 6'2". I would imagine he'll start and play because of Calvin Johnson.
Ah, right, right. And he is just a rookie. No, second-year player. Second-year player.
Second year out of NC State.
And then Tremaine Block would be their other corner.
That is correct.
5'10". Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So Johnson.
It's a beatable matchup here, all right? I mean,
without
really
question. And look, we saw, and again, he's still somewhat week to week, but we saw Stafford be very sharp this week, and he's played far better over the last 6-7 weeks, as you know, than he did earlier in the season when he was erratic. You know, so I think this is a tough matchup for the defense, for the 49ers defense.
Conversely, I think it's a pretty tough matchup for Blaine Gabbert. I know you're watching Blaine Gabbert.
I am.
Semi-regularly. And he's,
every week.
Is it still devolving, Greg?
Yes, it is. And he's devolving. The offense is devolving. It's a bad situation. It's a bad unit.
Yeah. I mean, I told somebody who's a friend of mine that in the Super Bowl to start the Lion D. And he was like, really? I was like, his alternatives weren't very good. But, you know, the Lion D is not making explosive plays and all that. They're not putting up sexy stats like the Browns of all team got against Gabbert 2 weeks ago. Remember that one? 9 sacks? I mean, that came out of nowhere. But, I mean, Detroit could dominate this one. I mean, this secondary, Terrell Austin is legit. I mean, the Lions D is really good, Greg, right? Still.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's the O-line for the 49ers has really been problematic, John, all season long, and this is a tough group to try to get well against.
Yeah, I'm thinking Ziggy Ansah and the Lions get 4 or 5 sacks. Maybe
they might get
play.
More.
Yeah. By the way, Sean Drawn is iffy to play, for what it's worth. We could be looking at Kendall Gaskins.
You might be looking at Mike Davis, because I believe he's practicing this week for the first time in a long time.
Yes. Let me see if I have an update on that as we do this, because I don't know if there was a plan for maybe. You know, so they released Travaris Cadet. They did sign DeJuan Harris. Mike Davis was cleared to begin practice, but he is not eligible to play this week.
Mike Davis is not?
No.
I thought he was, but you would
know
better than I. Yeah.
I don't know why, but this is from the very, very reliable Matt Maiocco, who, as you probably
know,
and I know him personally.
Matt,
ridiculous.
Yes, Matt would know that. I know him well as well.
Okay. We all know it. It's a very small industry in this NFL world, Greg. So, all right, there it is. You agree with me on the line. Giants and Vikings. You saw both defenses, both teams at least, on either one side of the ball. What did you see out of Teddy? He's on a little bit of a run here. It seems, Greg, like they opened it up a little bit and challenged the defense a little bit down the field.
Well, they really didn't, John.
Okay. That's why I said it seemed like. I said it didn't. I'm not saying they did, but go ahead. What'd you say?
They didn't. You know, it's really interesting because he had great numbers. He made two really, really good throws. The first touchdown to Diggs was a great throw. And he hit Mike Wallace down the seam on a beautiful play by Teddy, where it was play action. He read the coverage. Wallace was not the number one, and he made a great throw. Beautiful job. But in all honesty, and I know, you know, this is what happens when you watch every play, John. The Bears defense had as poor a performance as I've seen this year mentally. They made so many mistakes on. The big plays, like Diggs' second touchdown, which I believe was 33 yards, was a total miscommunication and breakdown by the Bears' defense. A 30-yard completion to McKinnon on the first series was a total breakdown by the Bears' defense. So there's 63 yards right there. So their offense was really no different. It's just that, you know, they had breakdown, and he did make two great throws.
Yeah, that first one to Diggs was ridiculous. I mean,
great
throw. that was like an all pro throw there.
Slot fade.
That said, Greg, the Giant D
is bad.
Know, they are not very good either. So
no, I watched them, and you know they're not very good. Obviously, we don't need to spend a lot of time discussing that. They're not very good. You know that they haven't been good all year.
Yeah, where's Prince Amukamara been? You know what I mean? I thought last year he had a good year. What's that?
He plays. I mean, he and Rodgers Cromartie, you know, they're the two corners. They struggle inside. Landon Collins does not flash at all on film. Now they're playing at times Cooper Taylor, about a 6'4", 225-pound safety. He gets snaps. They cut Merriweather, so Craig Dahl almost plays every snap.
Well, here we go, Greg. We did get the information here about an hour ago. Odell Beckham Jr. suspension stands per
right.
Our guy Adam Schefter. So now they're going to be without him. So it's really, I guess, hard to handicap it. What I really wanted to do was get an update on all these injuries here for the Vikings. But Eli Manning is going to be working with Reuben Randle, Dwayne Harris is banged up, Hakeem
and
Nicks.
Miles White.
Terrible.
Hakeem Nicks, yes.
It's not good. Not good here for Eli. So otherwise, let's see. Sharif Floyd, Everson Griffin, limited. I mean, it looks like they're a lot healthier here, Greg. It really does. Harrison Smith, practice. Linval Joseph, Anthony. Oh, they're all back, Greg. There it is.
There you go.
That's a problem, Greg, for Eli.
It is a problem. And without Beckham, it's a real problem.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to try, I would think, maybe to just lean on Rashad Jennings, but he can only do so much. So there you go. Problematic. Carolina. At Atlanta, speaking of problems, you know,
well, they played.
They played,
you know, two weeks ago, and Carolina beat them 38-0.
Yes. So, just how impressed is it? How impressive is Cam Newton? I mean, if you're a Panther fan and you're a Cam Newton fan, and you're watching his growth, you literally could not have hoped that it went better than it's gone this year. I mean, is that a fair statement?
I think Newton is really a much, much improved player. And for me, it's the little things, John. I mean, the ability is there. We
pre-snap.
Know that, you know. Pre-snap, on their third quarter touchdown drive, which ended with Ted Ginn's 14-yard touchdown, he hit Brown for 16 yards just before the touchdown to Ginn. But both the Brown 16 yards and the Ginn 14 yards were audibles by Newton at the line of scrimmage to get into the exact right play versus the defense. And you know, those are the kinds of things that really make a quarterback a high-level quarterback. You know, does he miss some throws here and there? He does. But he also led two drives in this game, one at the end of the first half and one at the end of the game. You know, that's good quarterbacking. So Newton is clearly, he's more refined in the subtleties of the position. He's been given more responsibility at the line of scrimmage, and he's taken it and run with it. I mean, he's playing really, really good football. I mean, even the touchdown to Funchess, the 14-yarder, you know, zone routes on, on one side was either zone or man, and he threw it to the other side because he knew exactly what was going. He recognized the man coverage, and that's what it was. He recognized man, and he knew the zone routes to the right would not work, so he threw it to the man side. I mean, he little things like that, he's understanding, and he's playing really well because of it.
Yeah, I mean, seems to be playing at a pretty elite level mentally, as far as I can tell. And also, we've nitpicked him in the past about the shaky accuracy and the erratic ball placement and all that. But I know he misses some throws, but it feels like he's cut that almost in half in terms of the erratic throws.
And it wasn't a nitpick before. He missed routine throws, at times badly.
True.
He doesn't
True.
Do that now. I mean, once in a while, yes, but nowhere near the amount he used to. I mean, that used to be a real problem.
And to wrap it up here, I mean, it's fair to say he's actually making the receivers better, which I don't think we could have said that 2 years ago.
No way, and you can absolutely say that.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to check out Cameron Artis Payne at all?
Yeah, I watched him. I watched their
offense.
Thought
he looked decent. Thought he looked pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a function of their offense. They ran the exact same offense. I don't think he stood out one way or the other. But, you know, I mean, the long run he had was, you know, you could have run through that hole, John. So, I mean, you know, I don't think, to me, he didn't stand out.
My first step quickness, Greg, is really good. So I probably would have taken it to the
house.
Well,
then it might be better than Cameron Artis Payne's.
Some long speed there. Oh, okay. I'm gonna jot that down. Cameron Artis Payne, no first step. Okay. And then we're just essentially bailing from the Falcons. It's like, look, We're going to suck it up with Julio. We'll see about the Norman factor and Devonta Freeman. You know, use him in fantasy and hope for the best.
Well, Norman will match up, to Jones. You know, Norman did match up to Beckham, but they didn't play man coverage very often. And, in fact, Beckham killed him. I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, he couldn't cover Odell Beckham. So it was, but Beckham's a different kind of receiver than Julio Jones.
Oh, so you would say that Beckham won that battle decisively?
Oh, it wasn't even close. I mean, he couldn't cover him.
Yeah. Maybe it's me, but that touchdown that Beckham had, what stood out to me was it feels like 3-4 seconds before the ball got there, Beckham just separated the last second. You know, that's the little things like that. The guy is so special, Beckham. I mean,
well, I don't know if you saw
the clock. Aside,
I don't know if you see, I watched every play, obviously, and I studied it hard because I knew it would be a big topic of conversation. Beckham was beaten mentally. He got into his head, and that killed Beckham.
Yeah.
But physically, it's not even close. Norman can't cover Beckham.
Wow. Now, would you agree with what I talked about with Roddy White on the radio last night that, Norman, he gets a lot of credit for being this shutdown guy and all that, but, they play a lot of zone.
John, they played 6 snaps of man coverage or 8 snaps of man coverage in the whole game.
Right.
They don't play a lot of man coverage.
Exactly. So it's a team-oriented defense, and Norman's getting all this love. And, good player, yes, not an island guy, right?
No, they don't play that way. See, just because you line up over a receiver doesn't mean you're playing man-to-man.
Yes, I 100% get that.
Know that. I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Right, right. No doubt. And sometimes, you shift back and forth quite a bit, too, so it's almost impossible to tell on TV. Let's move on to Chicago at Tampa. And you mentioned the Bear D, one of the worst performances for them of the season. It doesn't look like, though, we're going to see Vincent Jackson.
No.
What do you think here? I mean, we saw Jordan Reed kill this defense.
Well, they'll be better this week. When teams go through that, John, that doesn't happen the next week. And I'm saying that honestly. That's one thing I've learned through the years. When teams make mental – it's one thing if teams are just not good enough physically and can't match up. That's one thing. But when teams make mental mistakes, they don't make those mistakes the next week because they're coached hard. I know Vic Fangio, and this is not going to be a pleasant week for the Bear defense. And they're not going to make those mistakes this week. They will not be beaten mentally.
And not only that, you're not dealing with a very dynamic or diverse offense. They're going to run the ball. They'll get Charles Sims in the mix there as well. And they're going to throw the damn ball to Mike Evans, right? So it's not really that difficult to prepare.
No, and look, last week Winston threw the ball way more than they would normally want, but they got behind and they had to try to do that. That's not the way they ultimately want to play. But you're right, they're going to throw it to Evans.
Yeah. How about the matchup here? And it's tough because we don't know about Jeffrey, but, I feel like, look, the Rams and Case Keenum came out and made some plays here. Granted, only a couple, but, Tampa's secondary is clearly their weakness on defense.
Yeah, to some degree. Yeah, I mean, to some degree.
They're good against the run.
Yeah. I mean, they were playing the kid Aji Baramar, and he got benched last week after he gave up the touchdown to Kenny Britt. So they replaced him with Jonathan Banks, who was a second-round pick a number of years ago. They played last week a lot of big nickel with Keith Tandy as the third safety. So their linebackers, are solid, but Alexander's still out. So they've been kind of mixing and matching players at the other linebacker positions with David. So, they've got a few issues on defense now.
Dallas at Buffalo, Kellen Moore. Hey, at least Dez Bryant scored with him, but, short left-handed quarterback. I don't know if you have any thoughts there. I would think, obviously get it to Dez, but, Darren McFadden.
Well, look, everybody knows what Kellen Moore is. It's why he's not played in this league and why most people say he'll be a great coach. I mean, he's short. He doesn't throw the ball very well. He's has, by NFL standards, a below-average arm. So what he has going for him is he's smart and he understands, but he also threw 2 bad interceptions last week where he had no awareness of the backside safety. Now, that, if he plays more, that'll come, but you know, the only way he can play, you know, you got to throw it short. He can't make downfield throws.
Greg, the real deal in this one is Sammy Watkins. I mean, it's every week now. This is what they do. They just take deep shots, and Tyrod's been throwing it down the field accurately. But I got to be honest, I can't in my head think of a play in which the Cowboys secondary gave up a big play with the ball traveling in the air 30, 40 yards.
Well, and Taylor was awful last week, John. He must have missed five or six throws that were there that he didn't throw it, and he just broke down immediately and went into superhero mode. I mean, he was bad, and he had a tendency to be a beat late on many of his throws. He's a long way from being a refined NFL quarterback, but because he can run and you see those highlights, people think he's a good player. Yeah. But I was almost surprised last week at how bad he was, you know, because I think I missed a week or two with him, and then I figured, hey, I saw the numbers, and I saw some of the game on TV, and saw, you know, because you can't see the routes when you watch the game on TV. And then I put the tape in, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, he's breaking down immediately and missing. Greg Roman designed some really nice concepts that had people wide open within the context of the timing of the quarterback drop, and Taylor had no idea. He was just breaking down and running.
Mm. Wow. Plus, he's just lost Robert Woods. We don't know if he'll get Charles Clay back. So, you know, bottom line for us, would you be concerned about Watkins, at the very least, not making a big play this week?
He did throw it to Watkins a few times, clearly, you know, and I think they'll take those shots because that's Sammy Watkins can do that. So that's what I think. They'll certainly take those shots, John. I see no reason why they won't. You can't count on 50-yard touchdown passes every week, but they'll take those shots.
They're doing it, though. They're doing it. It's like four weeks in a row.
Yeah.
I personally feel like it's going to end this week because, again, I'll ask the question. Can you recall the Cowboys secondary giving up a big play with the ball traveling in the air this year?
They did give up one at the end of the Redskins game a few weeks ago to Deshaun with like a minute to go. It wasn't a 60-yarder, but he ran by Claiborne on a slot fade, but that's Deshaun Jackson.
True. That is, well, you know, this is Sammy Watkins. So that's a good point. It was just a couple of weeks ago, and I forgot about that one there. Claiborne.
That's why I'm
way,
here, John. That's why I'm here.
That's it, man. You just got the, you know, you could just pull it. It's like a computer, that brain of yours. Just pull it in, baby. Let's see. Let's move on. We don't know about the running back situation there. It's a tough call there with Carlos Williams. I'd love to back Carlos Williams, but if he's not healthy and they're going to see Mike Gillisley.
I like Mike Gillisley, Greg.
Not a bad player. He's looked good,
I liked
right?
him coming out of Florida. You know, again, like his relative, I didn't think he was going to be a big-time feature back, but I thought there was a place for him in the NFL. I think he's got good running ability. I think he can – if you had to play him for two or three weeks as a starter, I think he's fine.
Yep, yeah, and looks like they may, actually, as at least a co-starter with LeSean, unlikely to play. Green Bay at Arizona, how much does the loss of Tyrann Mathieu help – Green Bay? I would think it, for one, would help Randall Cobb in this matchup, Greg.
You would think. Their pass game has still not been... Look, Mike McCarthy, for the second week in a row, told you about the pass game. John Kuhn played 45 snaps against Dallas 2 weeks ago. This week against Oakland, he played 47 snaps. So their pass game is still not sharp. It's still out of rhythm, and they're not... It's not been very good. You know, what saves them is the fact that Rodgers does not throw picks. So even though the pass game has not had the same stability and continuity that we've seen over the years, they don't turn the ball over because Rodgers just does not throw picks. I think he has five all year.
So they're just going two backs and looking to run the football and kind of compress things? Is that kind of what they're playing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a run game right now. I mean, that's really what they're doing, you know. And I think, look, Don Kuhn wouldn't be playing if they really wanted to, you know, throw the ball, you know, real well. I mean, look, Rodgers did have 39 attempts. He was sacked a couple of times. But, you know, they faced a lot of man coverage, and it was not a comfortable pass game, John. I'm telling you that. It's not a comfortable pass game to watch.
Plus, the Cardinals play a lot of man. So...
They do.
I don't know who they're going to put Patrick Peterson on. That's a tough one.
He won't go in the slot with Cobb. He'll stay outside.
No, he won't. No, he won't. The question is, do you want to just shut down Davante Adams, or do you want to try and make sure that James Jones doesn't make a play? Because if you put
Peterson or Adams, Peterson will shut down and will give them other bodies to do whatever they want to do.
Right. So it's a problematic matchup overall.
Yeah.
What about their running game? You know, they are a little undersized up front, but they're still pretty good against the run, Arizona. I'm worried about the defense.
Well, they're not that undersized up front, John. They've got some bodies up front. They got Campbell. They got Gunter. You know, Frosty Rucker. They're not undersized players.
Okay. All right.
You're thinking Buchanan as a linebacker, which, of course, he's undersized, but they're not undersized up front.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. How about the matchup here on the other side?
It's a fascinating matchup.
Yeah.
You know, because Dom Capers is creative. He'll do a lot of things. But Arizona is an old-school offense. When they run the ball, they pretty much say, here we are, we're running it, because they'll put in two tight ends, three tight ends. They bring Fitzgerald into the formation to block. They say, here we are, we're going to run the ball. You have to stop us. We're going to block. Then when they throw the ball, they're kind of old-school as well in the sense that they throw it down the field. So, it's pretty much, you know, an offense. Obviously, the concessions to the new game are three wide, four wide, that kind of stuff, empty sets. But the overall philosophy is more old school.
By the way, real quick, back to Green Bay. If you're Mike McCarthy and you know, granted no honey badger, but you know that they're really good in man coverage, this to me aren't you looking to make Richard Rodgers a big part of it? The offense this week, they are giving up numbers as a tight end as well.
You would think, because, I mean, there's been times that Buchanan has played man-to-man on the tight end, you know, so I think that is a matchup you would hopefully look to exploit.
By the way, Sam Shields did not practice today as well for Green Bay. So when you look at Green Bay's defense, are they more vulnerable to a guy like Fitzgerald or the speedy outside guys, Brown and Floyd?
I think they're theoretically vulnerable to both. I mean, if Shields does not play, and he was inactive last week, so they started Randall and Haywood. I think Randall's a pretty athletic kid. He's a rookie. I think Haywood is probably better suited when all said and done to play inside. So that, you know, which I think, you know, Rollins can play on the outside too, the rookie. But then you're playing two rookies on the outside, which, you know, hey, they're talented athletic kids, but they're rookies.
Yeah, and this is Carson Palmer, Bruce Arians. Dialed in all year, throwing the football. So, all right, not looking promising for Green Bay, Greg. If the Vikings can win against the Giants, which I think they will with Beckham out, I mean, we could be looking at
Minnesota
a week 17.
Still win. Well, they play week 17, so that will decide.
I'm saying they could win the division, Minnesota. If they win and Green Bay loses, the Vikings can win the division in Green Bay in week 17. It'd be crazy.
And I think they would play again week 18 if that was the case. But I'm not sure of that.
Which, as a lifelong Vikings fan, I can guarantee to you, they will not emerge victorious if that's the case. I can pretty much guarantee that. I'm drawing on 35 years of experience here, Greg. Nothing against tape. St. Louis at Seattle. And are we going to see anything remotely close to the two or three or four manufactured plays that the Rams and Case Keenum made last week? Are we going to see anything remotely close to that? Yeah, I didn't think so.
That's not going to happen. I mean, I think Austin could make a play. They do, you know, they can get you with misdirection, and I think with a team like the Seahawks, a fast flow team, you'll see a good amount of that from the Rams, but I don't think they can win just doing that, and I think they're going to struggle to be effective. I think they'll have a hard time running the ball. And they're not going to, you know, Keenum was very efficient in that game and he made a couple of plays, but he's not going to do that against the Seahawks defense, in my opinion.
I'm begging for them to, you know, use Todd Gurley. Why can't they use him like the Steelers use Le'Veon Bell, you know?
In terms of what?
Get him the ball in the passing game.
Well, he's not that kind of receiver.
Right, but he's a weapon.
Bell can line up
as
a wide receiver. Gurley can't.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely fair. But, I mean, maybe I'm going back to Bell's rookie year where he was a little heavier and not as dynamic. I just feel like Gurley needs a little bit. Bottom line, Greg, he needs more touches is what I feel like. I mean, he can't catch the ball. I think he's more comfortable catching it than Peterson even is today.
Well, I would agree with that, but I, you know, again, running routes is a learned activity, and you can't just say get him the ball. You know, he catches little flat routes and that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, to say, okay, let's start running, you know, subtle angle routes, and let's start working against linebackers. That's not just something you can say and a guy can do, you know, tomorrow. That probably an off-season activity.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think he's a fair for a bigger guy who's a stud runner. I think he's a fairly comfortable receiver. He did catch 37 balls in 2013 in college, so he's got some.
Well, he's comfortable catching the ball, but then you know it's route running. You're talking about using him as a true route runner, not just as like a flat guy or a check down guy.
Well, you know, I'll take the flat and the check downs at this point, I guess is my point. But that's also a function, too, of the quarterback. But the bottom line is if he's stymied on the ground, they got to find a way to utilize him in any way, shape, or form. Russell Wilson against this defense, I mean, should we have any concerns? Robert Quinn's long gone. His history against him has been spotty, but he is in the midst of one of the most remarkable in-season turnarounds I've ever seen, Greg, at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and I think you'll see Greg Williams try to be unconventional in this game. They have nothing to lose. I think that you'll see a lot of mixed looks, a lot of blitzing. I think he'll try to go after it and see what happens. What do they have to lose? And where is this game?
It's in Seattle.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, I think Greg Williams is going to try that. Why not? And he has a history of that.
It kind of, though, feels like one of those games, and you've said this for a while in this defense, that they do have breakdowns. I'm kind of envisioning guys running wide-ass open for touchdowns again, yet again. You know, Lockett and Baldwin and Curse. I mean, isn't that kind of the Ram D? They're vulnerable to those breakdowns and big plays?
Well, that's been the track record. So yeah. I guess, you know, if you look at the track record, you could think, okay, it's going to happen again.
Right. Let's go to Pittsburgh and to Baltimore, and we're not going to ask you about, you know, handicapping Ryan Mallett potentially for the Ravens. They benched Buck Allen. I guess they bunched him as well. So not much to say here about the Ravens. Kamar Aiken is clearly getting it done for fantasy, and I guess not much to say about Pittsburgh other than stardom, right? I mean, Big Ben is feeling it right now. And how about the contributions of Marcus Wheaton? It's almost scary now because I feel like Wheaton's in a groove making plays out of the slot.
Well, you know, Wheaton was a very talented guy coming out of Oregon State.
And I know.
You know, he hadn't really put up numbers, but now their pass game has become, you know, very good week to week. They've got three really good receivers, you know, and both Wheaton and Brown can play in the slot and outside, and that makes it difficult for a defense.
Yeah. Raven D, I feel like, is improved a little bit, but, you know, they're still vulnerable to the big plays. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are looking good as they gun for the playoffs. And finally, the Monday night game is Cincinnati at Denver. You know, watching Brock Osweiler, you know, one thing, maybe I'm off base. The arm strength is above average, I would guess. I just feel like if he could just get a little bit more zip on the ball, maybe that's asking too much, Greg.
No, he's not a gun thrower. Yeah. He's an above average arm strength guy. Not a gun.
Maybe he's just a beat too late. I just feel like if he could just get just a second quicker, you know, he would be a lot better.
I think that's true of a lot of young quarterbacks, you know, just getting the timing and rhythm. And I think overall, he's played better than you could have expected for a guy who'd never played before and is playing
very
in big
fair.
Games.
Yeah,
but,
very fair.
You know, I think when people – I mean, I got asked after the last week, what's wrong with Brock Osweiler? As if he's been playing for 10 years and he's a Hall of Famer and all of a sudden he's not playing well. You know, the guy had four starts when I was asked that. And then he goes into Pittsburgh this week, has a great first half, and clearly struggled in the second half. I thought that he didn't see things as clearly, which, by the way, is very common for young quarterbacks. you know, and there's nothing wrong with him. He's going through the learning curve. He's just going through the learning curve in the cauldron of a playoff race with a team that has the best defense in the league and everybody expects them to win. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with him. He's going to play unevenly against good defenses.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, you know, he was a second-round pick. Granted, that's not incredibly impressive in this day and age. To me,
no, and that's
he's playing
old news
like
now.
A guy.
I mean, the guy hasn't played in 4 years. That's old news.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, he's playing like a guy who was, you know, maybe the 12th pick of the draft, who wasn't expected to start in September of his rookie year, and they put him in there in October, and he acquitted himself pretty well. And granted, we should expect that. He's a high pick. But that's kind of where it's kind of like, yeah, he's doing well. I mean, he's not lighting it up here. He's not perfect. But, I mean, for a guy who's been a backup and just getting his chance here, he's been kind of thrown into the fire. What about,
you know,
this matchup here?
He got caught in a game last week, John, that turned into a shootout, and he's not ready to play in a shootout.
Well, I don't think he's going to get one in this one with A.J. McCarron on the other side.
No, he's not going to get one. He's not going to get one. McCarron is perfectly fine this week in a game in which he wasn't asked to do much and didn't have to do much. He made two good vertical throws, one to A.J. Green and one to Marvin Jones. The touchdown to Kroft, the design of the play beat the defense, and it was an easy throw that any quarterback could have made. And for the most part, he didn't have to do much more than that. Now, their issue, John, and it is an issue, and I'm telling you, they cannot run the football, and Jeremy Hill looked terrible this week. So
I mean, they cannot run the football.
Yeah,
I give up. You've kind of said it all year. He's just had a terrible year, big time disappointment, and they're kind of screwed here, Greg. Because, you know, when you really look at it, Tyler Eifert's not going to play. Kroft is just a rookie. Green's banged up. So the Broncos have more quality corners than they have receivers, bottom line. So I'm not feeling it.
They'll struggle to score this week. And you know, again, now it depends on Denver. And hey, who knows? Denver's offense may struggle to score, too. We may be looking at a 13-10, 16-13 game. But I believe that Cincinnati's offense will struggle to score.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe Giovanni Bernard needs to get ready. You know, he can create at least. You know, check it down, get him the ball.
I think when the playoffs come, he's going to be playing an awful lot, and Hill will not be playing as much.
I agree. Yeah, it has to be the case. So that's good stuff there. Good job by you being on top of that, as always. Again, do you have any thoughts on the matchup here for Cincinnati? I mean, the good D, not a shutdown D. I kind of feel like Brock can make some hay here.
Yeah, but they're a good D, John. They're a really good D.
Right.
You know, they're not an explosive type D. I mean, they're not a high blitz percentage D. You know, they don't show up on the highlights because they're not that kind of D, but they're very, very solid.
No doubt. They're actually stymieing quarterbacks here, limiting them to minuscule production the last 4 weeks. So,
yep.
All right, that's it. We got through it. We got it in the books, so you can do your NFL matchup show on Christmas Eve day there. Get that in
that's
the books
what we're doing.
As well for week 16, sir. We appreciate it, Greg. Happy holidays to everybody out there. Merry Christmas and all that good stuff. Happy New Year. We'll wrap it up next week, Greg. The final matchup podcast of the season. Until then, for Greg Cosell, I'm John Hansen. Good luck in week 16.